Now we take you back to the night of March 27th, 2002, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Well, you know, up 30 miles, if the winds caught you wrong or changed during your operation, I mean, potentially you could get carried right out to the ocean, couldn't you?
Oh, not from that far inland. I mean, if you think about my descent rate, and there again, I'm going to be falling. See, when I reach my highest point...
Or at the very least, into the mountains.
Well, no, there again, if the upper winds indicate that kind of velocity, I just won't launch.
So in other words, you're going to have really good weather information.
Yeah, I'm going to have to know what the upper winds are doing and stuff.
How do you find that out?
Well, you can check with different weather services to find out what's going on. And you know, mostly it's where the jet stream is. If you're not in the jet stream, there's really not that much in the way of lots of upper surface winds.
So you hope the jet stream's up around Seattle somewhere?
Well, it just won't be right over me at that point.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, I won't do it. But also, when I reach my highest point, what I do is when I begin descending, I don't want to tumble. And I also don't want to deploy a parachute when I'm in an area where there's no air, because potentially I could wrap up and get caught in the suspension lines or...
Yeah, you've really got to fall far enough to begin to get some air for the chute, right?
Right, and that's going to take quite some time. So when I reach...
Like, how long will you... Let me stop you. How long will you be falling before you can deploy even a drogue?
Well, what I'm going to do, at the moment the rocket reaches apogee, before it begins descending, the nose cone comes off, and I'm going to inflate a large, it's not really a balloon, but it's kind of like a balloon. It's an inflatable nylon-type bag that, in effect, triples the volume or the surface area of the craft. And so as I begin descending...
More drag.
It creates more drag without the potential of it causing me to tangle. Then at around 50,000 feet, that will separate, and as it separates, that will pull out
the
drogue chute.
Gotcha.
And that way...
All right, so what kind of period of time? From apogee to a deployment of the drogue, how many minutes?
Oh, it would probably be somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 minutes or so.
Oh, my God, so you'd be falling for 2 minutes.
Yeah, it's going to be a long free fall because
that's cool.
A typical free fall from 12,000 feet or 13,000 feet in skydiving, a typical free fall is about 60 seconds.
Right.
And of course, you reach an average terminal velocity is around 120 miles an hour. Starting from that altitude, though, since there is no air, the acceleration just continues and continues. Colonel Joseph Kittinger set the world's record parachute jump back in 1960 from a balloon gondola at 16 miles high, and he came very close to breaking the sound barrier.
Really?
Yeah, he was falling very, very fast. Interesting, I actually met him. He's one of my mentors growing up. I was always very, very intrigued.
It's possible, it's conceivable you could break the sound barrier?
Oh, yeah, the human body could. I mean, the sound barrier sounds a lot more than what it is. It's just the speed that happens to be the speed at which sound travels. And, yes, I mean, the human body is capable of falling faster than sound. He reached top speeds just in excess of 600 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah, that's on up there.
And,
wow.
You know, when he left the balloon gondola, it was amazing because he falls away, and of course he had no way of controlling himself because there was no airflow.
Right.
And you know,
that's a real free fall.
That was a real free fall, and he had only had 30 jumps. He was part of what was called Project Manhigh, which was the beginning of this started in the late 50s, and it was to determine the kinds of things that people would go through in space flights. And of course, in those days, they had no idea of
So you go up to the edge of space and jump.
Yep.
Now that's got to be something to contemplate and then do. My God.
Oh, yeah. Especially with 1950s, early 1960s technology.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Brian Walker. Good morning.
Top of the morning to you, Art. And
yes.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I admire Brian Walker's courage, but I'm awful fearful. This is George calling from New York, listening to you on WABC. And I'm concerned that I'm a former aerospace engineer, mm-hmm. and I used to design packaging for rocket flight, et cetera. One of the toughest things is for a launch condition is to design your electronics to survive the launch condition
yeah. mm-hmm.
for random vibration and for shock loading. And I wonder if you're going to pre-qualify your electronics on shaker tables and vibration tables before you actually put them through flight.
Well, to a certain extent, yes, but then to another extent, I'm going to be relying very little on electronics for the actual mechanics of the flight.
Yeah, but you have video recorders.
Yes. Those things are things that could fail and not affect the actual outcome of the flight. For instance, the engine controls, the fuel flow that goes to the motor and everything else like that, these are not dependent upon sensitive electronic circuitry. The idea here is to, there again,
keep it simple.
I'm not attempting to go orbital.
I understand. Keep it simple.
Keeping it as simple as possible, and there again, this is not going to be generating the kind of, in a typical rocket, you've got pumps and things that are all creating harmonic vibrations that operate against each other and cause lots of problems. I'm operating on a pressure-fed fuel system that is forcing fuel into an engine, and I'm eliminating a lot of the areas that are going to cause high vibration and high stress loads for electronics.
How about that as an answer, caller?
Okay, well, as long as he's cognizant of it, and he's, because that's why spaceflight costs so much for NASA.
Sure.
Everything is pre-qualified. The no chances are taken, and there's lots of redundancy built in to any system that has to control the flight of the aircraft.
So what kind of chance do you think he has?
Well, I don't know what. Does he understand his G loading, and does he understand his
sure.
vibration loading?
Well, you know, I mean, these are things that are going to be hammered out more in the test. First of all, the initial rocket, but there again, this is so far and away different than launching, for instance, a satellite or human cargo into space. There's my window of error is so large here in comparison to typically what would be considered a space flight, per se. Just the fact that in a conventional rocket that's mixing liquid oxygen and hydrogen or whatever other kind of fuel, there's so many little tiny potential things that could go wrong. I have a virtually zero chance of what would be considered any kind of catastrophic explosion.
Okay, I have a question for you. Why not, if you really want to get up that high,
mm-hmm.
why not go up in a balloon and jump? I mean, why add the additional...
Because that's not the point. The point of this is the fact that I'm fulfilling this dream of designing and building my own rocket. I mean, growing up, the idea of what was the best thing in life I could do, and that, well, building a spacecraft and launch myself. So doing a balloon, and, you know, like I've had some people also suggest, why not use a balloon to lift the rocket to a certain altitude first? But that kind of takes away the excitement of the launch. I mean...
Yeah, and it introduces a lot of other variables, too.
It does. Also, for instance, yes, if I were to use a balloon to carry me to a certain altitude, my risk exposure is actually longer because the duration from leaving the ground to getting up to an altitude where I would then fire the rocket is a greater period of time to put stress on my life support system,
mm-hmm.
The potential for other problems to encounter.
Gotcha.
Like, for instance, when Colonel Kittinger did his balloon gondola, one of his jumps, because he did a number of these, he had a pressure loss and his hand swelled up to like twice its size.
That would be worrisome.
Yeah, and so I want to reduce the time that I'm exposed to the actual risk as low as possible, and that greatest point is going to be in the first 5 seconds. Because after 5 seconds, if everything has gone okay, then from that point on, altitude actually begins to become my friend.
Actually, your hand going to twice its size would be a precursor to exploding, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, when these are the accounts that I've heard, and when, of course, twice its size.
But, I mean, I think that way, if your hand got to twice its size, you're on your way to explosion.
Well, you're on the way to just a big, big expansion of skin.
Oh, yeah. All right, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Brian Walker. Good morning. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes, proceed.
Hi, Brian. It's a pleasure talking to both of you.
Where are you?
Denver, Colorado.
All right.
I was wondering if there's anyone at all trying to do the same thing that you're doing.
There is. Right now, there's a thing called the X Prize, which is a competition that has been formed by a St. Louis-based organization. Actually, it's kind of the same roots that put together the prize for the Charles Lindbergh one. And the parameters for this is to have a three-man rocket that can carry a pilot with two passengers to an altitude of 62 miles and then return to space within a two-week period. So it has to be able to complete two flights within 2 weeks. And there's a $10 million prize, and there's a lot of teams right now. And in fact, they have a website, xprize.com is their website.
And so there's a lot of teams working on
that? There's a lot of teams, and yet I just haven't signed up for that specifically because it's not really, you know, I'm not a team and I'm not trying to build a passenger-carrying rocket. And I've been doing this. This has been my goal has been a little bit different than doing that. But I'm not aware right now of anyone else on an individual basis like me doing this the way I'm doing it. At least I have not heard. There are about maybe a dozen and a half or so teams right now.
Yeah, but nobody else singly like yourself who's been devoted.
No, not that I know.
There you go, caller.
And I haven't heard it, you know, and then all the media and stuff I've done in the past 2 years.
Okay, thank you, Art. Thank you, Brian. I wish you good luck and Godspeed.
Thank you.
Yeah, Godspeed. I always say that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Brian Walker. Hello.
Hello, Brian.
Hello.
Brian, I used to hang out with you over at Scanlon's. I'm a friend of Lee's. I used to work as E21. I just want to tell you that everyone in Bend really supports you. And
Bend, Oregon?
Bend, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I've watched your progress from a toy maker all the way to now.
Hey, no, wait, you're a friend of Lee's. What's your name again?
Brian. I used to be a promotion manager of E21.
Oh, I remember. Oh, sure, I remember. Hey, how are you?
But anyway, I just want to let you know.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
No. When is the caravan when we can go down and support you?
Well, there again, I've pulled away from trying to live up to an established date. At this point, right now, my best hope is that by the end of this summer, I will have completed the test launches and gone up in the test rocket, and then I'm going to be taking all that data and during the next fall, winter, and spring, completing the full-size rocket, and I'm hoping to complete the main rocket launch sometime in the summer of 2003.
We'll be there.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll be there, too. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Brian Walker. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Walker.
Yes.
Mr. Bell.
Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Walker, first of all, let me say I admire your adventurous and independent spirit. And my question is, if NASA tomorrow called you and said, you know, we like what you're doing, but we think it's far too dangerous for a civilian to be doing, and we're willing to take you up in orbit around the Earth if you just abandon your project. Would you do that?
You know, it's funny you asked that because I've given some consideration to that a number of times. Because, for instance, when I was training in Russia the first time in June, Dennis Tito was there training, and I had a chance to meet him and stuff. And I've often thought about that exact thing. What if someone offered me a ride in lieu of this? And I'd like to be able to, you know, part of me would say, no, I wouldn't abandon this. It would be hard to give up that opportunity.
That's a $20 million ticket.
Well, it's, yes. And I've, you know, because I've often given thought to that exact same very thing. And there's a part of me that would just kind of like say, well, heck, I'll take the ride. But then there's the greater part of me that's like, no, I'm trying to do something here that has a little bit bigger, and I would almost feel like I was selling out. So I hope I don't, you know what, I just hope I never get the offer.
So you would go independently.
I want to continue what I'm doing and finish it because, like I said before, I've had so many people send me so many wonderful emails.
Actually, that's kind of a nasty question now that I think about it.
Well, it's a very real, it's a human nature question.
But it's a nasty question in a way, because I too, oh my God, the opportunity to go into Earth orbit, that'd be hard to turn down.
It would be hard to turn down. So I just hope I'm never given the opportunity to. It's just like winning the lottery. You know, you win a lottery and win a huge amount of money, and you go from one situation to the next, and it's not. It's most cases not a good thing.
Yeah. Listen, a lot of people would love to email. Do you dare give out your email address?
Well, I have this. People can email me through my website.
Okay.
So there's plenty of places. There's two places they can email me right through.
Yeah,
my
we've
website.
Got a link to your website, of course.
And they can go right through rocketguy.com, and I get the emails. And you know, that's another thing I've discovered. Not only am I a dyslexic and attention deficit, but I think I also have a obsessive compulsive disorder because I have answered 99% of my close to 10,000 emails.
Well, that alone will keep you out of space.
Yeah, that's taken a huge amount of time, but the fact is, it's something that, you know, this has become part of this program is doing this, and people send me some incredibly uplifting
emails. Has it happened at all, Brian, that occasionally you've had terrible misgivings, you've been ready to throw in the project, but you know that if you do, it's so public now. People are so depending on you for whatever perverted reason they have to go ahead and do what you've said you're going to do. That is a lot of pressure. Lot of pressure.
It is. There's been a number of times where I have literally hit. I have a tendency that I can fall into pits of depression because I sometimes just see how much I have to do. And for instance, just so many things in my personal life I've let slip the past couple of years because I'm usually up by 6 in the morning and I usually don't stop working until 10 or 11 at night, and that's an early night. And there's times when I felt like giving up completely, and part of it, sometimes, yeah, there's going to be a whole lot of people I let down, but then at the same time, it's like, I actually thought one day, what if this whole, I never would have gone to Russia and met Natasha if I hadn't been doing this project.
Right.
And I often have thought, what if that was the entire reason for doing this? Would I give this all up and consider the fact that I met Natasha and Sergey and consider that reward for this project? And I think I would.
Natasha might put it to you that way.
I don't, at this point in time, no, I haven't reached that point of doing that, but I do a lot of self-examination, believe me. I mean, like I said...
So what is going to happen if Natasha says, niet?
I'll deal with that if and when that happens, and I don't expect it to. I know that she is worried from the sense of not wanting to see me die, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know that she is very, you know, I've done radio and TV and newspaper articles in Russia because, you know, as I was saying earlier, they are so hungry to understand capitalism, and they're so much wanting to develop a system like ours.
Yeah, well, you're a big poster boy for that, that's for sure. Listen, we've done a program there, buddy.
You bet.
We're out of time. It's been wonderful. You're just a great interview, and you know I'm coming to see the first test, so you've got to keep me totally informed.
I will do that. I will let you know when that's going to happen.
All right, we'll bring our land yacht up and do a broadcast and stuff, all right?
There you go.
Take care, Brian.
Thanks, Art.
That's Brian Walker, Rocket Guy. Only in America, folks, from the high deserts, where it's just beautiful, spring is on the way. I'm Art Bell. Good night.